Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-host
Darkest Onion.
We're going to talk about Civ 6.
No, we're not. Civ 3.
Just yeah, Civ 3 as we're saying today.
Just Civ 3. Confused the four listeners.
Sid Meier's Colonization was released.
Oh, God.
Welcome to Polycast 255 with Makalua.
Hello. Oh, I'm actually capable of answering a phone. You know, smartphones. I'm not as smart as I think I am.
Imagine.
Civ 6 coming to your iPhone next week.
Dan Quick.
The May patch for the spring expansion to Real Life 2016 is here. Report any bugs to help at isanybodylisting.org and watch for the May 31st hotfix.
As well as the Mian Team.
Ice for Civ and Civ 6 will be Q back.
And I'm Dark Orion. I don't know how to do an intro right.
Wait, is it Dark Orion?
It's Dark Orion and Dark Onion. So it's both. It gets misread a lot. I use it both ways.
Darkest Onion today.
I thought you said Orion.
Oh, I did originally.
He did say that.
I got in trouble for that name on Facebook. It's scary.
Are you serious?
I'm not kidding. I got told not to talk to people because it's a scary name. I'm like, really? Doesn't sound scary to me.
Is it because you put dark in front of it?
Oh, yes. It means I'm so dark. I'm like, no, I'm not even like that.
If it's dark, that means there's nothing shiny, right? I hate it.
It's all about like a nebula and star formation, all that crap. I was an astronomy nerd for a while.
You can't have light without the darkness.
There you go.
Wait. I'm sorry. What's astronomy? I don't understand.
It's like astrology, but science.
You need to research that so you can get frigates.
Is it related to astronomy? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, astronomy.
Oh, that's right. That's correct.
Oh, well, why didn't you say so? Oh, now I understand.
Okay. A hero I dubbed the generic anti-hero. Have fun in the plot.
Civilization VI was announced on Wednesday, the 11th of May, by publisher 2K Games and developer Firaxis Games.
We are the explorers, the inventors, the architects of change, the builders of a better tomorrow. We strive. We dream. We inspire. Always towards something greater. All the odds we defy. The risks we take. The challenges we endure. Only make us stronger. There's no end to our imagination. And no limit to civilization.
Coming to PC on October 21st, 2000 and... wait for it. 16? What?
Honestly, I think it's too soon a little bit, to be fair.
Well, you got to consider they've been working on this for a while. They've just been radio silence until now.
True. I wanted a bit of heads up more than this, though, to buy it.
You got 5 months. Get over it.
Yeah, 5 months is
I wanted
long.
A year. Complain.
That's right. I will find something to complain about.
Okay.
Welcome to the internet.
What did everyone think about the splash art for the box, Atlas, holding the world?
That was nice.
Seems appropriate to me.
I liked it.
Yeah. There's people who want that as a wonder in the game. Assuming same number of civs in Civ 5 and even Civ 4, if you assume like some of the leader stuff, blending and all that, that gives them, 20 weeks, give or take, to drip all the information. So a good anywhere from 18 to 24 weeks worth of civs, one per week, and then mechanics. So, yeah, it's plenty of drip time.
Well, the developers made a very bold claim that the game is going to be as complex as all the expansions for Civ 5. They may not have needed to say that out loud. It's a lot to ask.
The number of weeks between announcement and release equals the number of civilizations upon release. Fact.
Facted it. Okay, Dan facted it.
They're not held to the standard.
Oh, and by the way, October 21st is a Friday.
Yep.
So there may be some long weekends for Civers this fall, yes.
Maybe.
Also means Fraxicon should be on the 14th or somewhere in there. If it's the 21st is a Friday, so 14th, 15th. There you go.
I'm Ed Beach, and I'm the lead designer on Civilization VI.
And I'm Dennis Shirk, the lead producer on Sid Meier's Civilization VI. And today we're going to do a drive-by commentary on the announced teaser trailer for Civilization VI.
A lot of people were like, I hope Ed Beach, who led the two expansion packs for Civilization V, is the lead designer on Civilization VI. Well, hashtag confirmed.
Hey, it's kind of obvious.
Hashtag woo?
Most of the team that was involved in the expansion packs for Civ V are developing Civilization VI.
In the first part of the trailer, there's a bunch of shots of a lot of stuff, and people quickly figured out that it was the Great Wall, a Colosseum, the Forbidden Palace, and Sphinxes. So they inferred, because Ed Beach and Dennis talked about, two of those are unique improvements and two of those are wonders. Although I think there was actually more than just those four, and people just kind of ignored the other pictures because there was other pictures in there. The Sphinx was a unique improvement, or for Egypt, because they're also inferring that Egypt's in, or that the Colosseum is a unique improvement for the Romans, if Rome's in, or that the Great Wall is either a wonder or a unique improvement for China, if China's in, or that the Forbidden Palace is a unique improvement. They had a few too many options.
Right, exactly.
I don't think they quite got it right.
Well, you could even have the Colosseum, since they're going local happiness, not global anymore, become a unique building. Like you said, for the Romans, or that you could only build one wonder, the Colosseum, not a Colosseum.
Yeah, yeah.
They definitely teased some things in that video.
Mm-hmm.
But I also kind of like the fact that they kind of dissected the video. They did what the community does anyway, which is take a video and let's parse this frame or these frames and start picking things out. And they actually went ahead and did that themselves more or less at the same time as the teaser trailer came out.
Yep.
I like this trend.
It appears you can put down harbors when you're not adjacent to a sea tile with the city.
They solved the AI one off the coast by not penalizing it the same.
So imagine defending that harbor. You have to put one of those secondary city fire fort things they talked about in there.
In the encampment?
There we go. I couldn't remember the name.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe not. Maybe. Harbors will be where you build your ships, and you don't have to actually have stupid cities on the coast that make no sense.
But hey, if we're placing our wonders where they're supposed to be, this means no more pyramids in the water.
Yay.
No more pyramids unless you're Egypt. That'll be a hard sell for me if that happens.
Yeah, or Stonehenge underwater. That was the one that always went underwater.
Waterhenge.
The Wonder movies are back.
Yay!
Woo!
Wonders take up their own tile on the map.
Yay!
And they also have terrain requirements. So.
Yay!
No, really? I don't think he's being entirely sarcastic with that. I like the idea myself.
There are some people on the forums who are a little salty over the terrain requirements.
Yeah, just a little. Get over it.
So you have to have desert for the pyramids or a mountain for Machu Picchu? I mean, what do I have to have for the Eiffel Tower, though?
Some make more sense than others, admittedly.
Yeah, some will make more sense than others.
With wonders on tiles, I'm beginning to worry that people might be able to nuke the pyramids.
And why not?
And
this could be really good. But understand, like, assume it gives you a bonus, and hitting it with a nuke drastically reduces that bonus. So you can walk in and beat up the pyramids just to be rude and take some of the bonus away percentage-wise.
Degrade exactly.
The one.
It's a really fancy, unique improvement that could be damaged, or you could even... I can just, you know, let's move the unit on and let's pillage the pyramids.
Exactly.
Like, money happen in real life.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that works for me.
Bring a combat explorer.
You want to protect it. You might want to protect that a little better.
We're really happy to say that the Great Work System is back in Civilization VI. A lot of that very interesting cultural victory that was introduced in Brave New World, we have the same elements of those here.
Archaeologists as a support unit.
Oh, that could be actually an interesting way for getting works of art and archaeology stuff if they have the same
kind of idea.
Is that you go pillage people's wonders from multiple eras before.
Pillage the loot, get 3 free works of art.
Exactly.
I can see that.
That would be an interesting way of doing it.
How about you tell Firaxis about that?
Sure.
Your empire is known for its thief economy. Perhaps one day you'll share it with a friend.
You steal a lot. We like you.
Yep.
We're really happy to say that the Great Work System is back in Civilization VI. A lot of that very interesting cultural victory that was introduced in Brave New World, we have the same elements of those here.
They talked about how diplomacy system might actually fit more along.
The greater the time lapse, the less war focus.
Warfare is going to be the normal condition early in the game, and then as you go through, everything's going to be formalized. You'll have to formally declare war. You'll establish embassies and so forth. The leaders are going to have some very distinct ways they play the game now. We have an agenda system that's going to drive them to each have things they care very deeply about.
The leaders have agendas. They have different takes on things. Well, it could be very similar to how they did in Civ 5 anyways, where certain leaders like certain things based on the random number generator.
I hope it's telegraphed, though, so we know what they're doing and it's not like...
We don't have to guess their agenda.
Like, why is Shaka being so peaceful in building the space station?
That would be kind of weird.
Random personalities.
That'll be in there. It'll be a toggle, because we all know we love the toggle.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. The open warfare was more common in ancient times, where it was easy to get in and out of wars, and there wasn't really a formality of international law built up over time, over the centuries. More formality was based around going to war, and that in the more modern era, going to war required a lot more, reasons.
Casus belli is what you're going for here.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's basically what they seem to be talking about, but not early game. So that'd be fine. I'm fine with CBs if they're in, because then maybe the AI won't stay at war with you for like 1 billion years because it built more units on the wrong side of the map.
And have the old how dare you're winning is the reason for being here.
Yeah.
I always just giggle.
Well, I hope they would actually fix the, hey, look, I'm near your city. Oh, okay. I'll give you lots of stuff in a peace deal because you're close to my city and you're attacking it. Nah, I don't want that. I take your city. Oh, look, you're nowhere near my cities. I don't have to make peace with you.
Exactly.
Like, what? What?
Yeah, hopefully they fix some of that crap and get rid of all the false choices. You know, all those screens where the AI popped up to annoy you and none of the choices actually mattered.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just an illusion.
Although you do know we have a pact of secrecy against you, right, Matt?
Oh, totally.
Just making sure you're aware.
If you nuke somebody, shouldn't there be a diplomatic, like, desire for peace after that, as opposed to an anger?
Well, it depends. Depends on the society. Maybe one society be like, okay, we give up because we've got nuked.
I know, I'd be like, that's
and
it.
Another, another society would be like, nope, screw you. You nuked us, we're going to kill you now.
And Civ 4 nukes counted a lot. Just launching a nuke on somebody was the equivalent of tanking a couple cities in terms of their war enthusiasm or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, AI in Civ 6 is supposed to have its own set of agendas, but then at the same time, it may come into conflict with how you're interacting with them.
Well,
their characters are going to change over time. I mean, based on how you're interacting with them. So if you decide to go after them with a nuke, maybe they're not nuke happy in general, but they either might be nuke happy to you in turn, or in turn decide that you are now their target, which is exactly what they should do.
Here's an example.
As opposed to, oh, you're being a derp, but, you know, my target says that I must go for science victory. No, I'm not going to retaliate, even as you're taking all of my cities, and you're going to be able to take the spaceship that I'm trying to launch. Nope, doesn't matter. I'm not going to change it, because this is how I'm programmed to be, regardless of what happens. That would suck, and that does suck.
Well, considering nuking Japan, as to the historical viewpoint, right? If you put that in Civ, should Japan then go, please give me peace, or should it just be whatever happens? You know, should the leader have a predisposition there? Or would that be too on the nose and sensitive historically? Because I know Civ backs away from sensitive stuff sometimes.
Well, there's predispositions, but then if they're kind of being left to their own devices, then they should probably be able to stay with their predisposition so long as the predisposition is in their best interest. If they're thinking, okay, my predisposition is to go for a science victory all the time, yet all the other Civs on the map are fighting each other, then maybe the Civ then decides, you know what, I'm probably going to be next. Or perhaps they're saying, hey, no one seems to be paying any attention to me. I'm not involved in this armed conflict. I'm just going to sit back here, and I'm going to win science while everyone else is fighting each other and beating on each other.
Turtle science.
I think the AI should try. Like, if you cannot win the war based on the evaluations, like, it shouldn't be stubborn.
I mean, Civilization IV was like, wow, you're willing to give up all of that already? We just started. Okay. As opposed to Civ 5, and you get the comment, I know I'm staring defeat in the face. And so then you're like, yeah, so give me all your gold per turn.
Well, like if I was in the industrial era,
no, what's unreasonable?
And an AI nuked me, I might quit the game. Because so I'd be like, what happened? Right? I don't want to dig
what
out.
What did I do that was so wrong that they got this far ahead of me?
Yeah, no kidding.
And then the AI is just doing the same to you.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? Screw you. You have the ability to quit the game. I have the ability to say, screw you. You have to
ruin your fun. Right. Like, it's going to be a hard game. Enjoy.
Well, I could argue that you ruined your own fun in a way because you weren't adapting to what was going on.
Yeah. Paying attention.
As long as it's, you know, logical and it's being communicated to the player. Like, you can say, how did I know they were pissed off at me? I don't know. Did you check the diplomatic modifiers any time in the past 50 turns? Oh.
It takes me all the way back to the first Civ game where Egypt showed up in, like, 1700s and threatened nuking, and I laughed and told them to go stuff it, and then they hit me with one. I was like, holy, I quit! You win!
Yeah, that makes me think of the first Civ game I ever played, and here I thought I was doing great because I had musketmen and stuff, and then Shaka showed up with tanks.
Exactly. You're like, no!
How dare the AI try to play the game, too? What? I mean, really.
I wish they were consistent with that. Like, try to win. Don't game throw, please. And don't prop up other AIs by game throwing, or human players. Don't prop up human players by game throwing. Just try.
I really hate the magic barrier on borders. It should be
flipped. Or the magic teleporting barriers.
Gosh. Well, not being able to go into somebody's territory because some magic wall appears because you don't have the tech to ask for open borders.
Oh, yeah. But I think should happen. Yeah.
Even though in history people just said, I'm walking through here with this army. You want to do something about it?
Well, this is the thing. What should happen is if you walk across an AI's territory and you're not allied with them or something, it should just have a negative diplomatic penalty while you're wandering through.
Like what we do now with city-states.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're not respecting what they say is their territory. You walked through with no permission.
Yeah,
sure. And maybe you didn't even ask, but either way, you're walking with no permission. So.
And again, that goes back to diplomacy of more formalized border recognition and not going into it was a much later in the species ideology.
So
thing, whatever,
would you be okay with that showing up later in the game, but not being there in the beginning when you and I usually win?
Yeah.
I'm on board.
I'd be on board for that.
I feel like most nations didn't like getting looted by foreign armies.
But they did it anyway. Barrier. Like, if you have a giant neighbor, say France, and France back in the medieval era decided to walk a bunch of armies through, say, Alsace, back when that was a thing, and Alsace didn't really have the ability to fight that, they just sat there and went grumpity grump and shook their fist at them.
Yeah.
They didn't stop them because they couldn't. There was no magic barrier at the border. I'd be thrilled with that being gone.
I also consider the possibility that early war won't have the same ramification. You don't declare. You just walk in and start hitting units. Until a certain period, nobody's going to have the government to go, hey, stop that. That's diplomatically inappropriate.
Well, I feel like you should still get some confirmation about whether you want to actually attack that. But aside from that.
Well, yeah.
Accidental. I'm going to move into the bog. Oh, look, I just declared war on somebody.
Kind of like those accidental nuke declarations that we occasionally get in Civ.
His borders were where?
Your army was where? Oops, my bad.
Yeah, so I would agree that some form of confirmation would be necessary. But the way he was talking about it, you know, ancient and classical times, going into and out of a war shouldn't really require much of a formal thing or much of a, if they do go CB, none of that.
Well, I'm all for anything that opens up the possibility of war and doesn't close it off. I don't like any system that overrules my decisions as a player.
Every technology has its own realism-based mini-quest, which speeds up research when completed. For instance, founding a coastal city or building ships will accelerate related nautical technologies.
I like this.
We have a whole system of things you do to spark your people's imagination out in the world. We call them Eureka Moments or Tech Boosts. And they're real-world activities that you undertake with your cities and your units. And so through this technology system, all of a sudden the tech tree, rather than being off on the side, it's integrated in with your gameplay.
Yeah, but they have to balance that out well. So that's the big worry with that sort of system.
Apparently they didn't have to do it with research agreements or tech trades, so, you know.
Yeah, no, but it's kind of one of those things that it could be like, if they don't think about it very much and just was like, yeah, everything's going to be easy to active research, and then you find out, well, okay, so the tech tree is much shorter because you've gotten, like, whatever the percent from whatever silly thing you had to do to get access to the tech, and it's all of a sudden the real tech costs are actually whatever the discount is. And it's
you have to presume
some. You basically didn't do anything.
I think you have to presume some competence of balancing how it works. Because if you don't, then it's just going to break the game. Like, previous mechanics that weren't balanced have broken their respective game.
It's one of those mechanics that they're bringing in that could easily break the game. Just like, you know, initial research agreements or other such silliness. It's like, it sounds like a great idea at the time, and then you find out, oh,
well, Civ 4 left tech trades in forever, so
yep.
Hopefully we don't get that.
Although I just had this mental image of us all being like really excited about science, Magic just coming around like smacking the candy out of our hand. No!
Mentats for you.
Yep. But the idea of you do something in game and that helps you towards other things in game that are similar to that, that would be awesome.
But what would you have to think of the idea you can't build a boat till you've seen the ocean?
Well, I would just suggest that you can't build a boat till you have access to the ocean.
Imagine you can't do the tet without a harbor. But the way they're making it sound, instead of can't do, it's more like can only do very slowly. The harbor probably gives you a percentage bonus to discovering sailing, for example.
You need water to build boats, because no one's building a boat in the middle of a desert.
Be really weird to see, wouldn't it? A little boat appearing, like, what are they building?
I mean, you could have something incidental where you find out that, hey, this wasn't intended to be a boat. It was just intended to be a container. But hey, look, it floats. But you probably weren't constructing a container that would be large enough to hold people in and supplies. And then you apply that to something. Oh, now that I actually have access to water, I can experiment. Can I actually make a larger scale version of this where the purpose is to go out on the water and explore? Because mother's the necessity of invention.
I don't think they will prevent you from researching sailing until you are on the coast, because that just would make no sense. And given tech tree and how in, say, Civ 5 you needed eventually to go sailing to get other stuff, that would be weird if you were just like, get to a certain point that you can't go forth if the tech tree is the same, that you can't actually research, say, tanks because derp, you never got off into the coast to think about sailing, so you can never find out about biology and water and oil. That would be weird.
I hate to have roadblocks, you're right. That's one concern with even the thought I was having.
Yeah, that would be bad. But say you're landlocked, but your neighbor's not, and you go send people over there to check them out, say your traders or whatever else, as in history, and you see them building ships on water, then yes, you should still be able to research sailing because, like, hey, look, they're building stuff and we just watch them.
I think there's also an instance where you might say, well, if you're on the coast and you're going to get a boost for researching nautical technologies, then aren't people just always going to do that? In other words, that is always the best choice to go down and get that particular technology because you can get it faster than any other ones available at the time. But to that, I would say, if you start on the coast and, for example, there are no resources there, and or a combination of, look at all this land that I believe is out there or that I have found, it may in fact be advantageous to say, okay, when I'm ready to look at what's on the water, if there's enough of a draw, then I'm going to go down that line. That may take me 5 turns, but if I know on land that I found some other kind of feature, I don't know, I found some stone or something. Oh, let's go and get the technology for the quarry because I know I can work that, I can see that, as opposed to what may or may not be out there on the coast. Then take those 10 turns to go and get that technology that allows you to construct that quarry and then look ahead to the sea. It just makes it that much more enticing to be able to say, okay, I've got this technology because it was 5 turns as compared to 10, but are you really that much farther ahead, and are you really that much farther ahead now as a result of that choice?
Yeah, it's goal-based. Even map-dependent stuff like go settle on the coast or, you know, basically play with the water side of things and you get boosts to being able to do water stuff versus people who don't, etc. Yeah, that all makes sense.
Well, for me, it depends on how the level of the boost and how it works with the integrated tech tree, to use that term they just threw out there, integrated tech tree. And I'm afraid the integrated tech tree will be a simplified tech tree that's linked to the boosted research. And if it is, it can cause problems in the way that I understand how to play the game.
Yeah, or if they leave population-based science in the game, despite that, those boosts, then you could just plow through anyways.
At this point in time, the terms, and I say streamlined and simplified, are
nice.
So loaded terms.
I'm using the nice version. I got some uglier ones. Those are the nice words.
Oh.
dumbed down?
Yep. Yeah. See, I don't use that phrase anymore.
Way too soon to start talking about that. Well, I mean, people are, but informed to say that this is streamlined, this is simplified as compared to previous Civ titles. Let's reserve that for a future date. And I know, how about when the game is actually released and people can play it? Then we can start talking about
it. Or at least
that.
You can see when gameplay video comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to at least see like what the mechanics are in detail before making that kind of conclusion.
Once we see some screenshots of the tech tree and things like that, then we can start making a judgment call on that.
No, I don't even think screenshots will help. You need gameplay.
We need gameplay.
Well, yeah.
I've just gotten used to being disappointed, so I'm just ready.
I don't know how you can not talk about Civilization Revolution when you talk about this. Similar units in Civ 6 can be combined to form more powerful corpse units, and corpse are available mid-game and later on, and three units can be combined together to make an army, which is exactly what you had in Civilization Revolution, or you had that from the very beginning. An example I saw on IGN was a Rifleman Corp. You'd have two units, two Riflemen. They're 40% more powerful than individually. Having an option to create a corp and then later add a third unit to create an army, which happens, you know, they say around 100 years later, but okay, later in the game, designed to open up new tactics and reduce overcrowding on the map, which was something that both Beach and Shirk were talking about in the later game, about having overcrowding on the map. And of course, overcrowding on the map, I wonder if that had something to do with this one unit per tile thing that we had, and then time goes on, and it's like, okay, we're going to do this little dance where you can move. No, you have to move first. No, you get out of the way. No, I'm going to have to declare a warranty of move. No, I don't want to do that. No, let's get open borders.
I would suggest, and I know other people have already mentioned this in the forums and that corps and armies will not actually alleviate one unit per tile, because if you can merge a bunch of units into a corps or an army, then you're just going to have a bunch of corps and armies wandering around, because why wouldn't you?
Maybe the idea is that if you've got, which, you know, like a corps, and then which is already, whatever the percentage is, it's more powerful, then it stands to reason that an army is more powerful than that.
Yeah.
Then maybe the idea is that you're not going to have as many of these on the map, because it can be like having two or three units.
But you're going to do it anyways, right? If you can build armies, why wouldn't you build more?
Well, consider a spearman attacking a city for a moment, backed up with archers, right? And if you're going to merge them, you get a 40% bonus. Wouldn't you rather have two targets in front of that city to soak up the damage in the city, or do you want one guy with 40% extra health?
Depends on the strength of the city.
True.
And whether or not you're going to be worried about them taking their turn and then attacking you.
Is it a glass cannon?
Do like the initial blow and then, you know, like the final blow before they have a chance to really meaningfully react, which might be advantageous then to have one instead of two.
Yeah. Actually, I think the more interesting aspect was talked about was support units. Being able to attach other units to actual units.
Bring a medic.
Or yeah. Whatever. Stuff like that. That actually might reduce it, because then, let's say, instead of building siege towers and catapults and blah, blah, blah as their own specific unit, they are a specific unit, but they're a support one. So then you attach, say, a catapult to your swordsman, and now it's taking up one hex as it walks along, and that catapult gives your swordsman the ability to destroy walls.
But the swordsman gives the catapult the ability to be defended better.
Yeah,
right. But exactly. What if you can no longer attack with the catapult because it's in the swordsman, or the swordsman and the catapult can have to choose which one attacks this turn, melee or ranged?
Well, no, the support unit would be a support, so the catapult itself would do nothing. Its entire purpose would be to help attack walls.
Okay, a modifier.
Yeah, it's a modifier. So the actual concept, like siege towers and stuff like that in Civ 5, those would just go away as individualist units that would be used and, you know, constantly get trashed because they're by themselves. They would actually be under a unit and give that unit a bonus is what I'm hearing about.
How might that work, like, navally, though?
Well,
battleships and all that, and submarines.
Naval support units. Maybe the submarines are support units for the battleships.
Giving them detection range or something.
Yeah.
Or whatever type of support unit might be out there for naval. Maybe if it could be that your troop transports, or whatever happens to be in the game at this point, can be attached to a battleship. So when you're sending your army across water, you can attach your actual naval units.
Bring a submarine.
To your troops and then protect them as you go across. Versus how many naval units do I need to mass push all my riflemen across the water?
Or in terms of pure support, you could have something like a tender ship, which would extend the range of movement per turn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could even see airplanes stationed on carriers as support for scouting rather than actual attackers.
Yeah. They really haven't talked much about the actual units or what constitutes a support unit versus a real unit. I know some people would be very happy to see archers just as a support unit to melee units and to give a first.
I'm not supposed to spam archers and conquer everything. Aw.
What I'm worried about, though, is if you put too many support units in through the ranged and through the siege as support units, you're going to end up with a game that's about beating each other in the face with your swordsmen.
That was called history.
Well, not today. We don't run a soldier in and hit them with a rifle in the face over and over again.
No,
they shoot at a distance.
You can make the rifles ranged in the melee, not ranged, with some archery support for damage or something.
I'd like to
work it like the MP now.
should be able to shoot one hex with something with guns.
Well, no, that's the thing. Maybe that's a combat mechanic thing that they'll fix, is that once you do start having rifles and stuff, they're all like one range units rather than go smack each other in the face units.
That would change tactics.
Exactly.
Nice.
It would make an inflection point in the game when you switch from walking up to somebody and beating them with a club to, hey, look, I can shoot you from a distance.
It has been suggested in some interviews that support units would include civilian units. So, for example, you could have a warrior and a settler combined together for protection, which to me just means, okay, so I only have to worry about moving that one unit when they're combined, as opposed to, okay, I move the settler, but the question is the warrior still accompanying it? Or even more humorous, say later on in the game, for example, if you've got like a great admiral equivalent or whatever, and you know it can move six hexes, but the unit that you have to protect it, say a destroyer, can only move five. And then it's like, oh, okay, I got to make certain that the destroyer doesn't move too far ahead of the great admiral because it's vulnerable.
Yes, it would be really, really nice if you move the main unit, port unit also goes with it at the same time. So less clicks.
Exactly.
That whole maybe streamline thing. Can we use that now?
Yeah. We can.
Is that
maybe
micro?
Put a maybe in front of it.
A streamlined is in reducing micro. Now, that is a fair application of the term. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or,
I like micro, though, tell you the truth, but I'm different than some people.
Well, okay, again.
It's got to have a purpose. Said, if it's just mundane micro, then there's nothing to it if you're not making choices with it.
Although, at the same time, if you want to be able to make that choice and move it individually, you still can do that.
Well, just don't have it attached, right?
Yeah.
So now you've got both. When I hear about reducing the micro, I actually think more in a multiplayer setting than a single player setting.
Oh, yeah, especially because some people around here like to play with turn timers.
Yeah, put it on a
you're trying to attack things and move an army. It's
But I'm really nice at the turn timer. I give you a full 90 seconds. That's ridiculous. It's so much time.
It increases during war, but at the same time.
Although I do wonder about what would happen if you get to water. Like, say you have a warrior guarding your settler, and then you get to water. And then you go to embark. What happens there? Do they stay together?
I haven't heard about embarking units or whether we're going to have transports back again, like Civ 4 or what. I didn't see anything about that yet.
But I'm just thinking in the Civ 5 context, what would happen there? Like, would they both embark together, or would you have to split them up and toss them in the water like you do now?
They must embark together. I don't think I want to see transports back, but I'd deal with it if we had it. Because I think a lot of people hated transports, if I remember right.
Transports are less micro than Civ 5 embarkation. I don't get that. It's like strictly irrational to prefer Civ 5 embarkation.
Transports had the ability for stacks in Civ 4.
So yes.
You move a stack onto a transport, whereas in Civ 5 there was no stacking, so what's the point of transports?
Yeah, unless you could stack on the transports like you could with planes. They could have done it that way too.
Yeah,
but
true, they could go that way. Very similar.
Well, transports were supposed to also be more vulnerable in some abstract mechanical way.
Well,
and I prefer not to have ships made of paper flying across the ocean with people in them.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, in World War I, they didn't want that either. And guess what happened?
Exactly. But I want abstract history that doesn't make it harder on me.
No, it makes it more so that you actually have to think. Like,
I'm supposed to think when I'm playing Civ?
I defend this thing that's made of paper and very vulnerable?
I build a transport. That's funny. I bomb your harbor.
They took away a victory condition, made a new one, and probably modified at least a third.
I bet score's gone after all the complaining.
Yeah.
Time victory.
Time victory.
To me, time victory barely matters because once you're playing the game for a while, you don't encounter it ever unless you're trying to encounter it.
Oops, I won is how it works for me on time victory.
It was the worst category in Hall of Fame, in my opinion. But other than that, it was fine.
We have made changes to the victory conditions. There's one victory type that's gone from Civ 5, one brand new one that has been added, and a number of them, including the space race, where the steps and process you go through to get there will be new and interesting.
From the official announcement, enhanced multiplayer. In addition to traditional multiplayer modes, cooperate and compete with your friends in a wide variety of situations, all designed to be easily completed in a single session.
Yeah, but they mean just team play there? Or are they going to add back permanent alliances? Or are they going to add combined victory conditions? What does that really mean?
And speaking of things we really need in multiplayer, are we going to get to trade maps?
Oh, what? God. Well, yes, please.
No. Oh, that sounds like diplomacy, Mackie. They're not really talking about diplomacy.
No, no maps.
The tech versus military is so skewed on the faster game speeds.
Yeah, you'd just be blasting through all your units. Like, hey, I finally got swordsman. Look at me. Now I got longswords.
Well, I also wonder if like player attention spans got shorter in the last couple decades because we want a lot of quick speed and ultra quick speed. I've seen that kind of comment. Like, can't you just sit down and enjoy the game?
No, it's the difference in the style of multiplayer, and it is a valid thing. You can't have competitive multiplayer games on marathon speed without them taking a billion years.
Yeah.
At which point, yeah, that's you're not really doing it competitively. You're doing that with some friends who, whatever, you're just going to do that when you do that. Others, like CivPlayers.com, would like the ability to play the game faster so that they can actually, you know, get in, play the game, get out, and be reasonably competitive with it while not spending like 3 weeks on a game.
I've heard these arguments before, but to me, I played games for a long time, 30 years, and I actually want to play the game. I don't need it sped up because I have to go to work in the morning. I just don't play the game if I have to go to work in the morning. That's my choice.
When you're talking about multiplayer logistics, that's not realistic. Like, you try to play a game of EU over, like, months, and you have more than a couple people, the odds that you finish that game, you plummet to virtually nothing. It's pretty ridiculous. You start having people who can't make it, or they miss a week, or whatever, and missing a week is often crucial enough that it screws you, so then they don't want to play anymore. And when you have, like, 20 people, things come up. Even if they're really dedicated players, things come up. Even with like 5 people, this is hard. You add more than that, and it's just ridiculous. Whereas if you have a faster game, you can actually finish it.
The whole point of this is that there's options out there for people. And if you don't like to play the game that way, you don't have to. But for those who do want to play competitively, they will have options for being able to do so.
Yeah, I mean, when you have those options available, it's not, oh, because this option is available, mine is taken away, or my option is affected because someone wants to be able to do this option. Someone can choose this option, and it doesn't interfere with someone else's option, and you have a comparable play. Part of it also is expectations, too, right? Some people will play, let's get to the point, however long it's going to take, to get to a formal victory condition, or let's play X number of turns, or let's play for X number of weeks or months, or the whoever gets like a 1500 score wins.
Right. Well, my concern, Dan, actually, is people like, say, for example, turn timers is a great example of it. They're useful for what they do. They speed up the game, but they also create a situation where people will continually want the game to go faster, and if they want that, I have to dump out of a game eventually because I can't even move all 10 of my units.
But that doesn't matter, though. If you're not going to play with people who'd play with turn timers, then that doesn't actually affect people who want turn timers.
Now you're getting into something that can be, and as far as I'm concerned, should be managed out of game, which kind of allows you to have a friends list, for example, and you get to know people that you are playing with. Or you join a particular league where it's like, you know, if you want to be in this league and recognize, then you need to follow these particular rules, like No Quitters League.
Yeah.
Right.
So then that way you have a reasonable expectation that, my gosh, it's going to be a crapshoot whether or not I'm going to be able to finish this game or finish my turn or whatever in time. And then if you realize, man, this person or these people, I'm going to be looking out for this username, and I'm just not going to play with that person anymore.
Resource-wise, people have spotted quite a few things in the water on the one screenshot.
I'm assuming we've got horses.
Yeah, that was...
They are in a screenshot.
No, not a Civ. They weren't rolling up to history, so they got pulled.
Horses are fiction.
Yep. What? Horses are fictional.
No, they just weren't important enough to history to include them.
I'm staring at them right now.
Nope, no horses.
Will you ever wonder why cars aren't in Civ anymore?
Yeah.
Yeah, they ran
out of cars. Didn't ever happen.
Also notice, actually, in the screenshots that there's no roads, except for to the district and to the district.
You've also noticed this, you see.
Yes. What's going on there?
Well, I've actually said roads are kind of silly on a certain level as far as play-wise. They just
To the other district.
Well, yeah.
Actually, hold on. Wait a minute. I'm looking at the picture, and it's like the first one with the city on the coast, actual coast. There's a road to the blue thing, and then a road over to the what people assume is the holy place, and that's it. But then there's another holy place just over there, and it doesn't have a road to it.
Well, see, these roads remind me of Civ Revolution's roads, where you say route to. I don't know. I get a feeling off of it like that. Like, you're going to pay X amount of something for the road to happen, not build. I don't know why I get that feeling looking at these screenshots, but I do.
I don't know. Maybe it's just a combination of, well, you know of how roads worked in Civilization Revolution. You're looking at how it looks like on screen, and it's triggering that
maybe
memory.
Hey, you can do that in Civ 5.
True.
Although in the second screenshot, I love all the round roads.
Isn't that interesting?
Like, instead of a road from the city to the pyramids, no, there's this like double loop thing going on.
Is it like the Oracle or there? Or is it like it looks like the Oracle or at least some kind of columns by some kind of religious building? I'm not even sure what it would be. It looks like a few wonders in my mind in that screenshot.
But the second one or the first one?
Yeah, the second one. Far to the west with all the round roads. That could be a chapel. That could be the Oracle at Delphi with all the pools.
I'm sorry, the Oracle of what? Oh, Oracle. Oh, yeah.
Oracle.
And
Oracle and Oracle.
No, but that's probably a holy site, but maybe that's an improved holy site. There's looks like there's one in the first screenshot, but it's got an extra building on it that one doesn't.
It's like it might be like a generic holy site.
Yes.
Yeah, whereas on the first screenshot, people are talking about that. The thing near the mountains might be, I wonder. Next
on the first
to
one?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah,
what would that even be? That looks familiar from somewhere anyway.
Speaking of those screenshots, the three official release screenshots. Number three, in terms of resources, I look in the water, there's fish, and of course there are crabs.
Yeah.
Whatever, I understand.
Then there's whatever's near that the lighthouse and the harbor, unless that's just added.
That looks like coral to me.
Or it's oysters, maybe? For pearls? Possibly? I don't know.
Maybe clams?
Yeah. Yeah, clams are oysters for pearls. Yeah.
I mean,
clam bake?
Yeah, clam bake.
Now I'm thinking about clam chowder and I'm hungry.
Boy,
well, it's almost lunch.
Make Dan hungry.
Well, what about on screenshot number three, in the upper right hand corner, this kind of copper looking like substance?
Okay. Yeah, this reddish stuff.
Yeah, the reddish stuff, yeah.
And then there's this also reddish stuff on the left side near the river.
Yeah, that looks like it might actually be worked as compared to the one on the right, because there's something constructed around the red and on the red.
Well, I noticed that on the northeast, there's also a farm on corn, I'm going to assume, or something, or maybe on wheat. Probably wheat.
Yellow. Probably wheat.
And the way it looks is interesting, because compared to the other farmland by the river, and how they differentiate between farmland there and farmland on the special tile, it's really good detail.
One's more yellow?
Well, one's more yellow. One has a stack of hay. The other ones have tiny haystacks. It's like there's wheat piled up here, and they took an effort to be a little more complicated on differentiation.
Oh, and then there's the flowers on the hill next to the river and the farms.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Drusane says in the chat, these are screenshots to show what the assets look like. Please don't take too much time figuring out game mechanics from the screens. I don't think we're talking about mechanics.
No. We're talking about possibly what resources and stuff are in there.
And aesthetics, too. Yeah. How nice.
And very specifically, I think, because people were like, but people are trying to make comments about, well, this district was way over here and the cities don't look right because these things are all separated and stuff. Keep in mind, Firaxis and 2K love to not use screenshots from real gameplay for their like drip, drip, drip because they are cluttered. And they know, like from Civ 4, Civ 5, they never actually did real gameplay screenshots. And even for the expansions, like where they had the UI in it, and the UI didn't match what you would expect in a game. They're just setups, just to show you stuff.
These are
just
playroom models, not actual cars.
We don't see the UI yet because that's too cluttered.
No, but the area directly around the city doesn't have any improvements whatsoever, except for the theater district, for what it looks like, the dinosaur land and the carnival thingy down there. But there's no fishing boat on the fish.
Exactly.
They want us to see the fish, not the fish.
What I'm wondering is if like the crabs and fish and all that now, as long as they're in the borders of your city, if you just have them.
That would be weird.
It's a general rule.
They kind of wanted us to make some effort to improve them before.
Well, I want to improve, but I at least want to have them if I settled.
Because you don't get stuff out of the ground if you don't actually mine it. So why would you get fish just jumping out of the water going, hi, I'm in your borders. We'll just jump onto your plate. No problem.
Well, it's because they talked about, you know, putting something down to speed up technology. It should have a default value, even if you don't actually choose to develop it, or at least a small
default. Well, that's what happened in Civ 5. Fish gave you food if you don't improve it. But to get the full value, you need to improve it. Same thing. But you don't get access to the resource, like the luxury item, like whales in Civ 5. You get some food from it, from that hex, but you never got the luxury item. Nonsense to do it that way.
It'd be easier, but I don't know if I'd like it.
It'd be lazier. That would be streamlining. Not actually having to improve things.
Like
that would be the definition.
One day, we'll streamline so well that the player won't be necessary to play Civ, but we've already seen that in those AI play Civ by itself games, so we're already there.
Well, I'm pretty sure these screenshots prove that there is no user interface because none are shown.
There can't be one.
Dan. That's true. Now you've taken the silly logic too far.
Act.
Okay. It's always fun to do. Wait. Mackie says there's bananas?
Oh, yeah, in the second screenshot on the far left of the screen, you can see a banana plantation.
Just noticed something interesting on the coast in the first shot. Do you see the rocky coast?
Yeah, well, people were talking about that. I was going to mention that, too. People have realized there are cliffs.
Yeah, you can see there's both cliff and beach things, so that's cool.
Imagine where you can't if you can't build on the cliffs for like harbors.
Or if you can't disembark on the cliffs.
Ooh, that could get ugly.
Or embark. I mean, you probably could embark. But then you throw
well, yeah, you can jump in the water.
I picture this guy jumping off it. It's like a
cannonball.
I didn't hit the boat down there. I dare you. Also, since you're winning full iron armor.
Hey, does that mean you'll fall faster? No, you cannot science. You're heavier. You can get faster for a time.
In the chat, Scott says, does it look like salt near the pyramids in screenshot number one?
Ooh, salt or iron? I can't tell either. Maybe salt?
The tears are delicious.
Oh, it's the south.
It looks pretty shiny for iron.
Yeah, it doesn't really look like it'd be gems, though. I kind of wonder if the flowers we saw in the other screenshot were actually gems.
Could be, but that's definitely not coal. Coal's black.
Yeah, definitely not coal.
Maybe I'm looking at it funny because I'm looking directly at the pyramids, directly to the southeast on that tile, and what I'm just seeing is little gray things near a little brown thing.
Yeah, it's
that's
something.
Iron. That's got to be iron. That's got to be iron.
It's iron or salt because it's a light color. It's not coal, definitely. But
see, I could see salt, but I want it to be iron. No.
Oh, there's deer.
A female deer?
In the second screenshot.
No.
There's a bunch of deer in the forest.
No.
Probably means campable.
And the second screenshot, it looks like there's a little village off in the forest. Is that a goody hut?
Maybe. Maybe it's a barb camp.
Isn't the technical term lucky hut?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, six and one half dozen of the other.
Oh, I know. Speaking of salt, suggested price for the game.
Yeah. I've avoided this till now. I apologize to our friends
in Australia.
In Australia. That's the first thing to say.
Yeah.
Civ games cost money. They're AAA titles. You're going to pay a premium. I'm already ready to pay the, what is it, the 4 DLC plus a soundtrack price. So for me, it's kind of like I've already budgeted that kind of idea. So I'm not sure what to say about pricing in other countries.
Yeah, the deluxe edition includes, as Dio said, the 25th anniversary digital soundtrack, the 4 post-launch DLC packs, so some combination of maps, scenarios, civilizations, and leaders. Individual DLC may be sold separately. Well,
No kidding.
Okay.
Not surprised by that.
So SteamDB has a store price list based on currency. If you live in Colombia, you are paying 22% more than everybody else, or at least the U.S. Canada is 3% higher, which, once you start getting up there in numbers, 3% starts meaning something. Japan's higher, Chile, Saudi Arabia, New Zealand, 12%. The euro, 13% higher. The British pound, 19% higher. Norway, 21% higher than the U.S. dollar. And this is not based on conversions, because what they did was take the price in the U.S. and then did a converted price based on real conversions, and then went and said, oh, this is what it looked like on Steam. So apparently the cheapest place to buy it is in China.
So should we all buy it in China and have the gift card sent to us?
Yeah, at minus 49%.
Off Steam?
It's
half off in China. What?
In China.
They're trying to open the Chinese game market, I would assume.
It is 45% cheaper in Mexico. 39% cheaper in Brazil. 37% cheaper in India. Malaysia's got 26. Indonesia, 25. Less. These are less.
Okay. Making sure.
Thai, Philippines, Singapore, Taiwan, South Korea, Hong Kong. These are all less.
Maybe to discourage from game piracy in some of those places.
Maybe. But if you've...
Or to reflect economic conditions in a given country, that's like, you know, even let's not be unrealistic about our pricing.
No.
No? I'm hoping I'm happy.
If you're in Britain paying 19% more, you really want somebody in China to gift you the game. Because that swing in price is massive. Going from $30, the real price being $30 US in China in yuan versus the British pound version being $71.
Oh, yeah, I know that's a difference.
More than twice the price.
But I'm also worried that if people really did try to get people in China to give it to them or Mexico, we might find a weird effect on the profits of the game if we all flee to
other countries to get it the best price.
Their fault for Steam using not actually converted pricing, but region-based or currency-based, pick a random number pricing.
Yeah, it's complicated. I just simplify it to how much does it cost? I have to live in America currently, and like, gimme.
Yeah, so. for everybody around the world who has different currencies, Steam is not the place to buy a game anymore. Just go find it on other places that actually use exchange rate.
Yep.
Right. And
then you will pay the same prices in the U.S.
Yep. Buy everywhere. Shop around.
Yep. Buy everywhere. Choose not to buy Steam games on Steam.
And perhaps if enough people do that, then Steam will notice a change in their bottom line, not just regards to Civilization VI, and be like, oh, maybe we should do something about that if we actually want to be making more money.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you're not buying directly from us. You're just activating codes from everywhere.
Exactly. Well, at that point, they'll probably try and just ban that. To sum up, Steam is still screwing everybody around the world.
More or less.
Bad Steam. Spanking.
And they didn't buy you dinner first.
Exactly.
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
Call in today.
In North America, 301-637-7659.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Log on to the series' official website at
thepolycast.net.
What if they remove barbarians entirely because of the nature of the tile system and everything that's going to go into it, and they don't want to deal with having everything you own constantly special improvement raised by barbarians?
Barb City States. That'd be a feature.
That'd
just
be a
make Barb City States.
Barb City States, because the Barbs overran your second city because you just tossed it out in the middle of nowhere and then created their own little nation.
I want them to, like, screw you or not just they might appear in the fog, so you have to position your unit right to block it from spawning.
I don't know,
it can appear and move on the same turn, so your worker can get shanked from four hexes out for no reason.
I don't know what I'd do if there weren't barbs in the early game. I might just like keep pitting next turn.
I think they should just be like hyper aggressive city states that build units and attack you, and if you underbuild and there's too many of them, you can die.
Comment on the Ars Technica article. It was written by someone goes by Mike Phoenix. He goes, "Dear my life, we had a good run, but now a new True Civ title is releasing. You and I are going to have to take a little break. You knew this was coming eventually. We will see each other again one day. You know what happens, that little button flashes for just one more turn and I can't help myself. So, my dearest life, you're gone for now, but not forgotten. XOXO, Mike."
Nice.
True.
I don't know, though. As I've gone further in the games, I get less and less the desire to continue the game because that save feature's gotten so convenient.
Dear real life, it's not you, it's me.
Yeah.
Yeah. This has been episode 255. All Civ 6 all the time. Been joined by Mac Lua.
There better be a coffee resource.
To me and Dean.
District of TMI.
Mr. Quick.
The teaser trailer for Polycast After Dark comes at night, every night. Hopefully this episode of Polycast has been informative, thought-provoking, and if you're listening to this episode after Civilization VI was released, entertaining as you laugh at all the things we got wrong.
Exactly.
I was going to say.
And we've been joined by the darkest of the onions.
This game looks like it's going to be awesome.
Yes.
Everything is awesome.
Everything is awesome.
Wait, that sounded like Mackie singing. Everyone be quiet. Go ahead, Ben.
Nope,
Mackie
nope.
Has yet to attain victory in this thing off. It's like
And Phil, are you going back and forth and from close to your mic and not close to your mic?
Not anymore now. That was happening a little earlier, because I didn't want to, like, chew on you guys, but...
Okay.
No, actually, what it sounds like now is you've gone back to the 70s in AM radio. I don't
what?
Know.
Yeah. This is my usual mic position.
Yeah, for a while there, you were actually clear, and then you're back to sounding like you're gone again.
Seriously? Should I just, like, do this? Is this better?
No, that's worse.
Oh.
Okay.
No, now you're just far away AM radio, as opposed to...
Okay. Up front. Well, then, no, there's something else going on here that's wrong,
nope,
then.
That's
not...
That's better. You're better, yeah.
That's a little better.
Okay.
You're like FM now.
All right, I'm trying to, like, turn the mic plug here.
Civ 3 was the best.
What?
Best Civ game in the series, yep. You've run out of iron. You can no longer build units.
You went to build gunpowder units? No saltpeter for you.
I don't know. Civilization 3 was the best at making us want to play Civilization 2 again. Can I revise your sentence?
There you go. Or making us wanting Civ 4 to get here sooner.
So I'll go ahead and I'll press the start streaming button, and then I'll do all the tweeting and all that fun stuff.
All right.
And the button's been pressed. Oh, no. Everyone run.
Okay, whatever. I'm going to walk away from that now.
I said, I'm starting streaming. Imagine, I'm going to walk away from that now.
Yeah.
What?
Oh, you're walking away from it now because Mackie was coming. Mad? Really?
Can there only be one caffeinated person around here at the time or something?
Gandhi is the lead character again.
I'm on board with the people who don't like that.
I'm on board with Gandhi being in it because Gandhi is awesome.
Nope.
Yeah, last time we had the Holy Roman Emperor in the game, everybody had a fit.
Right. Well, don't we all want Canada, though, honestly?
Look, there will be Canada in Civilization VI because Modder will add it on day one.
Yep.
I'd like tech trading back, but I kind of feel why it was taken out, because I would abuse it.
Everybody abused it.
And Mackie's doing something in the background. I think she did it.
Oh, holy crap. I don't know what... The last thing is I was saying something about Dan being obsessed with the game, and then everything went quiet, and I thought it was my internet for a minute, but apparently it was Ned's my headset tried to pop out.
Oh. So instead of getting muted, your headset decided to stop giving you...
No sound for you. I have no idea what you guys are saying after that point. It's probably better knowing you guys, though.
What about multiplayer?
What about it?
It'll be faster with the
Let's hope it works.
Graphics.
Question mark?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's been communicated that there are new multiplayer modes intended to be completed within a single session of a few hours.
Turncast mode!
It's been desynchronized. You cannot continue the game.
Therefore, it only lasted 2 hours.
Yeah.
Here's a question. Do we get proper co-op mode now?
The screenshots are helping out with discussions about art style.
Exactly.
What is it with everybody?
You can do pins!
And yes! Pins! Thank you!
Yay!
It's an easy way to flag stuff.
Can I put a little caption with the pin, though? Because it talks about, like, different colors and stuff. So I can type, like, this is where your mom and I...
Yeah.
And make notes. And the other players see it.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
I'm putting the red pin on the map where you went wrong.
Yep.
Why is my map full of red? Well...
Well, if we can draw on the map, we're going to get silly.
This is what Turncast After Dark is for.
There you go. What is that? Just look closely, right?
We're not going to acknowledge it's been 11 years, it's been 12 years, but 10.
10's a big milestone.
And if we're getting to 20, well, we'll see.
Wait, hang on.
You know what?
Yeah.
I'm not one to make predictions, but I don't think there's going to be 20 seasons of this show.
Probably not.
Make sure you're going to give up on the show?
Just in case, Dan, make sure you're recording this.
I mean, I could be wrong.
Because if we get to freaking 20, I want you to play that clip back.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll make it, guys.
We're not going to make it,
man. Are we really still doing this?
The hell?
We won't want to go do other things and stuff.
Like lunch.
Yes.
Are we stuffing things again?
Yes, lunch. That's what we're talking about. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you can do it over lunch.
Okay, here's my response. BRB, lunch.
Yeah, okay.
Because that's literally what would happen.
I don't think that's true, though, because you're not going to be right back. The show is going to end.
Well, yes,
I was about
to say,
I guess Mackie wants the show to keep going. Well,
no.
I mean, it will, just not this episode.
Oh, yes. That's right. We could continue on to the sing-off. That's true.
No, we're not doing the sing-off.
One day we will have the sing-off to decide who gets to determine who sings and who does not sing.
Yep, one day we'll have a meeting to discuss when we're going to have the meeting.
Mm-hmm. God.
And we'll have to pick, like, ridiculous songs.
Record date, May 14th, 2016.
Civilization 6 teaser trailer commentary clips courtesy IGN. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.